If you love the History Extra podcast, make sure you follow us to keep up to date and get all the latest episodes. Thanks for your support, and I do hope you enjoy this episode.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Try Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. Built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, incredible load times, and 24/7 WordPress priority support, your sites will be lightning fast with global reach. And with Bluehost Cloud, your sites can handle surges in traffic no matter how big. Plus, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. Get started now at Bluehost.com.
Buzz around artificial intelligence is seemingly everywhere. Is your portfolio keeping up? Consider the GlobalX Artificial Intelligence and Technology ETF, ticker AIQ, which invests in dozens of stocks at the leading edge of this disruption. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. Technology companies can be affected by rapid product obsolescence and intense industry competition. Before investing, carefully consider the fund's objectives, risks, charges, expenses, and more in the full or summary prospectus at globalxetfs.com. Read carefully. Distributed by SEI Investments Distribution Co.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI. It's possible because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
What they did was they looked at the biggest economic challenge of their day, whether it's the Great Depression or the Industrial Revolution, and they examined it, analyzed it, and came up with ways of helping all of us to better understand what was happening.
That was Linda Yu discussing some of history's greatest economists.
Listening to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine. We're the UK's best-selling history magazine, available in print and several digital formats all over the world. Find out more at historyextra.com/subscribe or look out for us in your digital newsstand or app store.
Hello and welcome to the History Extra podcast. I'm Rob Attar, the editor of BBC History Magazine. Today's interview is with Linda Yu, an economist based at the University of Oxford. She's the author of a new book entitled The Great Economists, and that was the subject of her conversation with our staff writer, Ellie Cawthorn.
So today on the podcast, I'll be speaking to Linda Yu, who is the author of The Great Economists. So The Great Economists looks at the lives and theories of 12 really influential economic thinkers who shaped the field from Adam Smith to Karl Marx. So Linda, to start us off, I wonder whether you could give us some tips after researching these 12 remarkable figures. What conclusions have you come to about what it takes to become a really great economic thinker?
A great deal of hard work. I think all of the great economists share that in common. And also an ambition to tackle the biggest economic question. So all the great economists, and they do disagree with each other, so this is nothing, it's not one line of thinking. What they did was they looked at the biggest economic challenge of their day, whether it's the Great Depression or the Industrial Revolution, and they examined it, analyzed it, and came up with ways of helping all of us to better understand what was happening, and then importantly, what can be done about it. So in other words, how can you end the Great Depression is something John Maynard Keynes worked on. Adam Smith was very concerned about the impact of the Industrial Revolution on people's motivations, their livelihood. So they all analyzed these problems and then pointed ways forward in terms of policymaking.
I wonder if you could outline some of perhaps the slightly broader intractable issues that economists have grappled with over the last 250 years.
Unsurprisingly, a lot of the issues would be quite familiar to many of us because economic growth has been a topic, is the topic that's really the focus of my book. So obviously there's a lot of areas of economics to be concerned about. But in this book, I was very focused on trying to not just explore how you increase economic growth, but also the quality of economic growth so that livelihoods are better for all of us. So to give you a flavor of what the great economists have been thinking about, Joseph Schumpeter, the Austrian economist who created an entire field around innovation, entrepreneurs, he was very interested in the question of what drives innovation. So to raise our standards of living, we need to have stronger economic growth that's derived from more innovations, inventions that have changed the world. So you can think about electricity, for instance, was a big invention that changed the way we lived. So Schumpeter examined how entrepreneurs rise and fall, what ecosystem. It's a term we use now. It's not a term he used then, but he essentially outlined an ecosystem of what was needed to support businesses, especially entrepreneurs and innovators. And that has helped shape our understanding of what drives innovation and then ultimately the well-being of a society. And other great economists were very concerned about issues such as inequality. So Alfred Marshall, the Cambridge economist, he's the father of what's known as neoclassical economics. So in other words, he was one of the real pioneers of the economic field. And he was very much focused on how you address income inequality whilst encouraging the economy to prosper. And he was writing at the turn of the last century. So this is also a long-standing issue. We're not just concerned about inequality now. It's been an issue for some time. And finally, another great economist in the book is Douglas North. He was very interested in why is it that most countries are not rich. So around 200 countries in the world, only about a quarter are high income. So his research looked at the role of institutions, good government, good governance, rule of law, culture, norms, how people interacted with each other. All of those institutional issues he brought into the analysis to help us understand why some countries are rich but most are poor, and importantly, the lessons that can be drawn to help those countries that are not rich become more prosperous.
I think something that the book is really good at highlighting is that these thinkers weren't coming up with their theories in a vacuum. They were all a product of their times. Why do you think that historical context is so important for understanding the theories of these great thinkers?
Oh, I think the historical context and their lives are very important to understanding where the ideas come from. I think ideas are rooted in their times, and that helps me later on in each chapter. So every chapter is around an economic problem, and it's focused on the great economists who first came up with the idea that can help us tackle our current challenge. And so therefore, you need to understand where the idea comes from, the times in which it's rooted, so then you can adapt it and trace the arguments and the refinements over the years to where this thinking or this concept stands today so that it can be applied to our current economic challenges. So in other words, one of the chapters is on why are wages so low. So that's the first ideas around how you think about why wages are so low came about, unsurprisingly, in the aftermath of the Great Depression, where unemployment was high, wage growth was very slow, and the Cambridge economist Joan Robinson, who came up with the model of imperfect competition that helps to explain why labor markets work so imperfectly, once you see that it was rooted in the Great Depression and the Keynesian revolution that was sweeping the profession at the time, you can assess where the ideas come from, the thinking comes from, and then the subsequent challenges to that thinking, and draw out the robust strands that are still pertinent to our problems today.
Whose ideas do you find the most inventive, surprising, or unexpected, considering the time in which the thinker lived?
Well, I think all of the great economists, their ideas were seminal, so they were all quite original and surprising since they forged a new path. But probably I would say the economists that really went against the grain of mainstream economic thought was Friedrich Hayek. So Friedrich Hayek is an Austrian economist who was part of the Austrian School of Economics, and he was diametrically opposed to John Maynard Keynes during the Great Depression. He had a totally different explanation of what caused the Great Depression, and he famously argued with Keynes throughout the 1930s about the appropriate ways to address the Great Depression. And remember, at the time, Keynesianism was sweeping the profession, where Keynes's ideas around using government spending to right the economy, increasing state investment to create jobs, all of that was being challenged by Friedrich Hayek, who had moved from Austria to the London School of Economics. And he was very much focused on free markets and on why it was that government intervention really wouldn't help matters a great deal. And their arguments had become so famous, it's actually become the subject of two different YouTube videos, rap battles, where current rappers imagine what the arguments between Keynes and Hayek would have consisted of over the Great Depression. Hayek later on became a real inspiration for the Reagan and Thatcher revolutions of the 1980s, and he was credited with being the source of ideas that associated free markets, economic freedom with liberty. That was one of the ideological drivers for ending the Cold War. So I think Hayek has probably had quite a fascinating life, and certainly his ideas, I think, have really influenced quite a lot of not just economics, but also how history has evolved.
The first economist that you discuss in the book is Adam Smith, who's often referred to as the father of the field. For people who may not know much about Smith or his foundational texts, perhaps you could explain why he was so important to economics.
Adam Smith was the first person, really, who, and this is again rooted in his time, in the 18th century, he was witnessing the advent of industrial revolution. So up until that point, there was no real market as we would understand it in terms of supply and demand, factory output, urbanization. So what he did in The Wealth of Nations, his seminal work, was to create a better understanding of how an industrialized economy worked. So the invisible hand, which was his concept, helped to make sense of why it was you didn't need a plan, but individuals could trade, could sell their wares, how the price signal enabled factories to know how much to produce, what to sell it, the price to sell it at. And so this insight has underpinned all of economics since then. He also wrote about concerns over how people working in factories, which are very mechanized, so you do these routine tasks day in and day out, how that could affect their constitution, their health, their motivation. So he was very wide-ranging, but obviously extremely, to this day, insightful in terms of how he analyzed economic issues and how the market worked and the role of the state, all insights that we still draw on today.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We don't always realize just how much our negative thoughts and experiences stick with us and weigh us down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mum does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/historyextra today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/History Extra.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Another of the 12 figures that you discuss is Karl Marx, and of course this year is the bicentenary of his birth. What do you think that Karl Marx's legacy is in terms of economics? And also, are there any economies today that Marx would recognise?
Probably the only remaining communist country organised under central planning, which is under the Marxist approach, is North Korea. But we know so little about North Korea, I'm not sure anyone can say that with great confidence. But of course, the country that's been most successful, that's still run by communists, is China. And I'm not entirely certain that Marx would recognize the Chinese economy today as adhering to his principles. Of course, the Chinese Communist Party did follow Marxism for a time before the split with the Soviet Union in the aftermath of World War II. And China was run as a centrally planned economy following some of Marx's principles until market reforms were introduced at the end of 1978. But market-oriented reforms, those that have introduced competition, a degree of privatization, all of those things are the reasons why China has become the world's second biggest economy. So injecting capitalism into an economy which is communist in its political system, I think might have been a curiosity to Marx. I think under his ideas, his concept, you really couldn't have communism and capitalism coexist. But remember, Marx's thinking was always that once capitalism takes hold, because of the exploitative nature of capitalists, there would always be scope for a worker rebellion down the line.
You suggest that, in your words, there is, quote, a chronic dearth of women in economics, but you do have a chapter on Joan Robinson. I guess this is two questions, really. I wonder whether you could just talk a bit about the gender balance in economics, but also explain to us why Joan Robinson was so important and so influential.
Yeah, economics has a relative, has had, I should say, a relative lack of women for, well, Joan Robinson, since Joan Robinson is a very good example of it, because she obviously wrote nearly a century ago. There's a research-based website called ARPEC, which tracks academic economists and researchers. And of the over 50,000 economists in the world, less than a fifth are women. And this is an improvement on Joan Robinson's time. She was writing in the 1930s. Joan Robinson was the most influential female economist of the 20th century. She is the pioneer of the field of imperfect competition. So this sounds pretty obvious to most of us, but markets don't work perfectly. And yet, the classical economists thought so. They thought that the invisible hand would allow supply and demand for a product to set its quantity and its price, and people would be paid according to what they produced. Joan Robinson was a disciple of John Maynard Keynes, and the Keynesian revolution began to poke holes at the idea of perfect competition. So Keynes famously said that if you waited for the economy to right itself, we'd all be dead. And so there are a lot of imperfections in how the market works in the short and the medium run, which is the period that actually affects us now. So Robinson wrote the first Keynesian textbook. So she really helped establish this field of what happens when markets work imperfectly. And her subsequent focus, or the focus of most of her research, is on when it works imperfectly in labor markets. So she used the term monopsony, which means that firms exploit workers in the labor market. So it's a parallel term to the term monopoly, which is when firms have market power and exploit consumers in the product market. So she really examined issues that were extremely pertinent then and now, which is what happens when labor markets don't work perfectly. Well, you get low wages. You also get what she described as hidden or disguised unemployment. So in other words, people are underemployed. They may want a full-time job, but they can only get a part-time job. And importantly, she focused on the remedies of what you do about it. So once you see that imperfect competition is because firms have monopsony power, then you should introduce competition into that labor market so that any firm that exploits a worker will lose that worker to another firm. And so quite a lot of her ideas are very relevant today. And her work has certainly increased our understanding of labor markets by a great deal. She also had a rather colorful life. So she was married to another Cambridge Don. She had an affair with another Cambridge Don. And in addition to the three of them, there were two others who were in this inner circle, entrusted by John Maynard Keynes to review his seminal work, The General Theory. So Robinson was very much at the heart of Cambridge economics, at a time when it was very much changing the profession. But then later on, she distanced herself from Keynes and decided that Keynesianism couldn't help explain what was happening in terms of economic growth around the world. And she started to focus more on economic development. And she became an admirer of communist regimes, such as in China, in North Korea. And she even wore peasant outfits to deliver her lectures at Cambridge later on in her life. Another, I think, great example of a great economist and how their lives and their ideas have evolved, but still remain quite relevant to us today.
Towards the end of the book, and throughout, you discuss why it's useful and interesting to use these thinkers to think about modern day issues. Perhaps you could just highlight some of those specific issues and how looking back at these figures might help us move forward.
There's so many issues that their ideas could help us with. So, I've talked about a number of them already, which is why Joan Robinson's ideas can help us understand why wages are so low. David Ricardo Adam Smith's ideas from the 18th and 19th centuries can help us understand when we should worry, but also how we should think about trade balances. Trade deficits obviously are very much being debated still today. But I would say in terms of one of our big current economic challenges is do we face a slow growth future? And the work of Robert Solow, who is the creator of neoclassical growth models. So he would be, I think, a economic thinker whose focus on breaking down the components of economic growth helps us to think about how to prevent a slow growth future. So, for instance, one of the reasons why this is being discussed quite a lot, why growth has slowed down since the 2008 banking crash. And even before then, there were already signs that economic growth was slowing alongside productivity growth, which has been going on, as I said, before we had the banking crisis. So I think a lot of people in especially advanced economies are wary of turning Japanese. So Japan is a stagnant, rich country, which has never really grown very well since its banking real estate crash in the early 1990s. And understanding the components of what goes into growth models can help us avoid the Japan scenario. So Robert Solow focused a great deal on not just workers, but also investment, the human capital, so the skills and education of workers, and of course the role of technology. But where his thinking is really pertinent today is you cannot raise productivity of workers or enable people to invent if there's not enough investment in the economy. So a worker can't be that productive if they're not given the tools to be productive. And investment is also a key feature in terms of infrastructure, not just roads and rail, but also digital infrastructure. And particularly since the banking crash, investment has been cut severely in terms of the public sector, but private firms are also not investing. So this real lack of investment is something that Solow's work points to as a real impediment into potential growth. And his model allows us to think about factors like this, and then as a result, think about ways to raise investment, which could then help raise productivity, which then can help avoid a slow growth future.
I think finally, to come to a conclusion, what do you want readers to take away from your book?
A sense of the economic ideas that have transformed the world from the Industrial Revolution through to the golden age of economic growth after World War II to our digital era today. I hope they can gain a sense of some of the most transformative and seminal economic ideas of our over the past two centuries, and how those ideas can help us think about our economic challenges today. And finally, I hope they enjoy, I know I certainly have, reading the biographies of some of the most influential men and women in this field, gain a sense of their lives and their times, the history of economic ideas. I hope they can take away a sense of the people behind the ideas.
That was Linda Yu. The Great Economists, How Their Ideas Can Help Us Today, is out now in the UK, published by Viking. In the US, it's due to come out in June from Picador, with the title, What Would the Great Economists Do? And just before we go, I'd like to mention that the May issue of BBC History magazine is now on sale. Inside this month's edition, we have articles on Elizabeth Woodville, Karl Marx, suffragette violence, and a spectacular operation from World War II. Look out for it in all good retailers now, plus our many digital formats. Well, that's about all for today, but do listen in on Thursday when Taylor Dowling will reveal how close the world came to nuclear war in 1983.
Thanks for listening to this History Extra podcast, which was produced by Jack Fletcher. Do let us know what you think about this episode by emailing podcast@historyextra.com, and we might read out your messages in future editions. Alternatively, why not keep in touch via Twitter or Facebook, where you'll find us at History Extra. For more great history content, don't forget to visit our website, historyextra.com, which is full of history articles, quizzes, image galleries, and more. Plus, it's where you can download hundreds of previous episodes of this podcast.